This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 87 of the DTV Digest. I'm Mike Parkin, your host, and joining me this week in the room, no less, is Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
And Will Bentley.
Yeah, I'm here.
Awesome. So this week is an interesting sort of collaborative event with all of us huddled around one little microphone, and little it is as well, but we're going to crack on. This week we're looking at some films about astronauts. Our main review is a film called Solace, which you can find on Netflix. Our throwback is the Mark Strong starring Approaching the Unknown. And as usual, we have the washing up, the coming soon. And now it's over to Rich for the DTV chart.
Yes, here we are. It's the UK DTV chart, based on the official chart, top 100. Going to jump right in. We've got 12 out of the top 100.
That's good.
In the chart this week, which was... this is actually the chart that was published on July the 7th, Sunday, July the 7th. So number 12, it's The Asylum with San Andreas Megaquake.
Yeah, I talked about this the other week, didn't I? I said it's the most Trumpian asylum film yet, because their premise is the only way to destroy an earthquake is to have a good guy with an earthquake gun, basically.
So come you need on. An earthquake to solve an earthquake.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's the way they've gone.
It's the silent sound.
Yeah, so it sounds very Trumpian to me. It's the idea of like, yeah. We're going to put an earthquake gun on every sort of San Andreas fault.
What does the earthquake gun do?
I've no idea.
Does it start more little earthquakes?
Probably makes one big earthquake just to sort of encapsulate all of them. I don't know.
I'm sold.
It's Asylum. They cost about, what, £50,000 to make or something ridiculous like that. We know that Dave's a big fan of them.
But it's the sequel to San Andreas Quake. So I think you can see what they've done there.
To amp up the
quality. Number 11, we reviewed this on the show a few weeks back, so we talked about it quite a lot. It's Keanu Reeves in Replicas, number 11.
Keanu Reeves as a crazy mad scientist trying to bring his family back to life as clones.
Clones, yes.
With various results.
Yeah. With hilarious results in some cases. Not necessarily intentionally so.
Not intentionally. Was it supposed to be funny, or...? I think I saw a billboard ad for that.
He's got.
It's got a good pub cover and everything. I'm surprised it didn't get any cinema exposure, but it's quite attractive. People are interested.
It works on the premise of, he's got like this guy who he's friendly with. He's not like exactly his best friend, is it?
Yeah, he's a
guy from work, and he just puts so much shit on him. It's like, I need you to help get rid of the bodies. You know, this sort of thing.
Yeah, you've got to steal all this.
You've got to steal all this equipment from the lab.
Millions and millions of pounds.
And I need you to hide the original bodies.
It's unintentionally hilarious. Another film that's probably unintentionally hilarious, but I haven't seen it, is number 10, Megalodon. Sorry, Michael Madsen.
So this is the bargain basement version of the Meg.
It is.
And it doesn't necessarily mean it's any worse than the Meg either. So
no, the Meg was all right.
Thanks. Just didn't have any real teeth to it. You
know? Hey!
I went there.
All right, so Megalodon, I mean, like, are we seeing anything new?
I don't know. I haven't even watched the trailer for this one. I just know the cover art for the UK release has been carefully composed to make it look like in the same colour scheme as the Meg. So it's the blue and yellow, basically.
Okay. The trailer actually looks like there might be more action in it than the Jason Statham version. But knowing The Asylum, you know, what you see in the trailer is literally what you get in the film.
Suitable for a younger audience?
Oh, no. Asylum films can be quite cynically dark, can't they, in terms of kill scenes and things like that.
Really.
Did you see the one about the...
Well, they do kids' movies, the High School Musical knockoff they did.
What's the one they did about the fire tornado or something? Did you see that? Or was it me and Dave saw that? I can't remember what it was actually called.
We did one called Fire Tornado. There was Fire Tornado. It had a different title, but it was the Casper Van Dien one. But I don't think that
was it wasn't
Asylum.
That one.
Oh, no, wait.
That one. It was that one. That's the one where he was the fireman.
I don't think that was Asylum, was it?
I've watched that.
Yeah. There's a character.
It's literally as bad as it sounds. It's just like, it's so weird. It's like a massive tornado that's on fire.
Yeah. But yeah. there's a character, and it literally follows them around. It's a car chase being followed by the tornado. But there's a kill scene in it where one of the characters gets brutally murdered by her boss, who's like trying to cover it all up with a golf club. And it's like, it just seems really out of step with the rest of the film. But Asylum could go there.
Pretty darkly. Yeah. I think I remember watching it. It was one of those where, I mean, it is actually, those films are value for money, you know, because you just sit there thinking, is this actually happening, or you know, am I actually watching this? Like, it was just so weird. It was just the weirdest. I came in halfway through. I was watching with my partner. It was like, it's a tornado that's on fire. Yeah,
that's chasing a fire truck. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. And you just had to sit there with your mouth open for the rest of the thing, just watching this. It was brilliant.
Genius. Well, Megalodon was an Asylum film. I don't think it's going to be the last Asylum film yet. So we've had two already. Wow. So number 9, Change of Pace. The first of two films about basically the same time in history. It's The Guard of Auschwitz at number 9.
Yeah, so something we talk about a lot, Will, on the show is that any film... Well, the UK market seems to love...
The Nazis,
yeah. Any film with a swastika on the cover of it is actually going to sell quite well.
They don't necessarily love the Nazis, but they like films about
that period in history.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it World War II, or is it kind of the darkness that Nazis kind of?
It's set in Auschwitz.
But anything about sort of, you know, World War II battles and things tends to do well. But anyway, what's next?
At number 8, we have The Asylum again. It's D-Day, Dog Company. From the same people who brought us Operation Dunkirk last year.
Is this a kind of Saving Private Ryan type of narrative?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. For this one, I haven't managed to track down a trailer for it, so I'm not sure of the quality. But this is the one with who's in this one? Is it Steve Bauer?
No, it's Randy Couture and Chuck Liddell. It's either Nicolas Cage's son or his cousin or something.
All right.
I think.
Interesting.
Does talent run in the family?
you could play that either end, couldn't you, really?
Well, Cage himself was it Martin Scorsese's?
Yeah, there was
nephew. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So there's a whole Cage Coppola family clan kind of thing in there.
Was it Scorsese or Francis Ford Coppola?
I'm confusing Scorsese and Coppola. Always did that.
Easy to do.
We don't say that if you ever actually get the chance to meet them.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
We'll never get an interview.
Yeah, the clue was in the name.
And next.
Right, next one up is, it's still doing really well. At number 7, it's Gerard the Butler in The Vanishing.
Yep,
Gerard Butler.
This is still on my list of films I haven't seen yet that I want to see. So this and The Kid are the two that I'm sort of like, yeah, I've got sitting at home, waiting to watch, and, you know, just not happened yet.
Okay. Talk me through it. What's the...
Okay, so you've got three people working in a lighthouse in a remote part of Scotland. Yeah, so it's a period piece. And, like, a dead body washes up on the shore with a suitcase, and the suitcase is stacked full of money or gold or something.
Okay.
So, you know, it becomes a bit of sort of Treasure of Sierra Madre, or they're sort of like thinking about what should they do with the money, you know? And then other people turn up looking for the money, basically.
So. Period version of Shallow Grave.
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Did we not? I recall this now from when we were going through trailers like a year ago, I think. I seem to remember.
It's been, yeah, I think it came up a while ago.
Because I'm sure we saw this was one of the trailers we had to watch.
Possibly, yeah.
Because I remember seeing Joining the Lighthouse thing.
Well, there was one called Cold Skin. Which was also a lighthouse, but also with creatures.
That had like a fish boy in it.
Kind of a shape.
That was pretty good, actually. Yeah. But this looks really good. I've got the disc set at home, just haven't watched it.
Right, and at number 6, it was originally a Sky Cinema presentation, so now on DVD. It's Serenity with Matthew McConaughey and what's the name? Anne Hathaway.
This apparently is a bug nuts film, this one. It looks, you know, if you look at the poster and things, you think, okay, I'm getting a bit of a sort of a dead calm sort of thing, you know, sort of set on the ocean, you know, psychological thriller. And apparently it's
completely like sci-fi.
It goes somewhere very weird. Yeah.
It's directed by Stephen Knight, who
has
done a couple of things.
I can't remember what
the films was that he did. Right, so we talked about that in the previous episodes or whatever. We're moving on to number five. So we're into the top five now. Alone We Fight with Corbin Burnson.
So it's another World War II one.
Of course it is.
Nazis in this one? Or?
Yeah, so this one...
It's American.
This is an American one, and it's based on a true incident where a very small group of army rangers sort of held the line in this forest. And you know they've managed to get hold of some decent pieces of kit to up the production values. It looks like it still looks like a shot on video though. You know, it's on digital video. Which
is this a based on real events thing?
Mm.
I think I was reading about that particular real event a while ago, shortly after D-Day.
I think so. Yeah,
like as in within sort of 48 hours after D-Day,
probably.
The Battle of Hoopken Forest or something.
Yeah. Did they have to take out an artillery?
I think they're literally just sort of holding the line while sort of, you know, there's a retreat or something going on. But I think it was like three soldiers sort of holding them off. But yeah, always like that sort of film, you know, sort of the underdogs and everything.
Yeah, me too.
Now the next film on the list kind of touches on a theme that we're going to be exploring more in our feature reviews. It's Mads Mikkelsen fighting survival in the Arctic.
Now it's weird because, you know, on Netflix he's got a film called Polar, and now he's got a film called Arctic.
Yeah, well, and I was confusing the two originally.
Well, I did as well. Yeah, that you really sort of saying, "Oh, we're going to cover Polar." I think, looked at this other trailer, I think it was the same film, but maybe they changed the title. He wants to do a survivalist movie. Okay, fine. You'll have a look at a survivalist movie. This looks very well shot.
The cinematography looks really good. What kind of a one-man show kind of thing?
But as we'll get on, unfortunately, I find these films a little bit of a drag. You know, the sort of one person alone sort of thing. It's probably why I haven't bothered with the Revenant as well. Having said that, I've got and bought Iceman at night, so we'll see how that goes.
And at number three, it's one of our favourite films so far this year. It's Avengement.
Yes. It is. Have you seen this yet, Will?
No, I haven't. I've loving the title already. Avengement, was that?
Scott Adkins plays the younger brother of Craig Fairbrass. Does a job for him, gets sent to prison because he gets caught. And basically, what should be a 5-year sentence ends up being a 10-year sentence because people keep coming at him and he has to kill them, basically. So then he breaks out of prison and goes to this old pub. And basically holds siege in there, sort of, you know, telling them what's been going on and waiting for his brother to turn up to sort things out. It is
Nick Moran's in there.
Yeah, Nick Moran's in there.
And Thomas Turgoose and Leo Gregory. Mark Strange.
Mark Strange in it, yeah. And Louis Mandelor as well. So,
in some of the cutaway scenes.
Yeah. No, so it's a really gritty and violent film. It's it includes a really nasty curb stomping moment.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Oh God, we do seem to find.
Well, it doesn't cut away either. In fact, it goes close up.
Brilliant.
Highly recommend it. We do enjoy that.
But otherwise, it's really good. You know, I don't know. You know how true to life it is that, you know, basically it keeps getting done in prison for killing other inmates who try to kill him, and they just sort of automatically just slap another year on his sentence sort of thing. I don't know if the powers of the governor sort of stretch that far, or if he would be tried again.
I think he would be tried again.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think
just for veracity of the story, I think it's a case of, yeah, okay. And to show how clueless the governor is, you know, it's a case of, yeah, we're just going to, you know, you've killed somebody, we're going to add another city. Yeah,
one more
10 year. Guys trying to kill me, you know.
And also, I think you'd probably get more than just 1 year for murder, I think.
If he's her murder.
Yeah.
But yes, it is very, very good. And it's sort of Scott Adkins' best acting performance today, for sure.
Right. Disappointing to not see it get any closer to the number one position.
Hmm.
But number three is very respectable. Number two, Auschwitz, proving popular once again. It's from the same makers as The Guard of Auschwitz. It's The Angel of Auschwitz in number two.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead. So what's the premise with this one? I think it's interesting.
Okay, so this one has a woman who's a midwife helping Jewish prisoners have their babies, basically. And then Dr. Mengele is in there wanting, you know, because he's obsessed with twins.
Yes.
And things. So anytime twins are born, he's sort of taking them. Yeah, it's grim. You know, very well made. And I've only seen the trailer. That's as much as I want to see, basically.
Wasn't the movie called The Angel of Death?
Yeah, right, okay.
So that's the play on... That's why the film's called that, because it's not...
I think it's because of the
I think they're trying two things there. I think you're right. I think the Angel of Death thing is a reference, but the nurse character, the midwife character, she's the literal, more literal angel. Sort of the real, you know, the good angel. Good angel, bad angel kind of thing.
It sounds like a pretty... kind of dark drama, sort of gut wrenching and sad. But is it though? Is it going to be made from that, like from a with sensitivity, or is it like the rest of the kind?
No, it's not. It doesn't look exploitative. As I said, I've only seen the trailer, and that's as far as I'm going to get, because the whole anything to do with the concentration camps, I just can't watch personally.
It's dark.
Yeah, it's just, exactly, because it's true. Like, I don't mind dark material, but I don't want it like real dark material. Yeah,
when you know it's actually when something that exactly. has actually happened.
But okay. It's very well made by the looks of it. But yeah, grim.
A rare example of a director having two films in the
top ten
in a single week. And number one, John Travolta and Morgan Freeman in Eye for an Eye.
I've started watching this. This was originally called The Poison Rose.
It was indeed.
Yeah, in the States. It's also got Famke Janssen in it.
And Brendan Fraser.
And Brendan Fraser, who's
And one of Travolta's daughters or wife. His wife or something. I don't know. There's another Travolta in there, basically. It's not Joey Travolta, which would be brilliant.
Yeah, but...
That's a hell of a cast.
Yeah.
How come I've heard nothing? How come it's not sort of, you know, classic?
Because it's John Travolta. And it is, you know...
He is one of the kings in certain circles.
I don't know. Because obviously, his name means something somewhere.
Well, yeah, but some of his films where he's been flying solo have not done so well. So I think here what we've got is the Morgan Freeman factor coming into play. Not Morgan Freeman's first DTV movie, has to be said. He was headlining a film. He did one with Antonio Banderas called Thick as Thieves back in the early to mid-2000s, which was one of the Millennium Films kind of ones. Crap, really. But Morgan Freeman, people still, even though he does DTV stuff, would have people have got a lot of respect for him, and I think he still has cachet. And even though people might be disappointed with Travolta, if you put him in the right project,
he's brilliant.
Yeah. So I think what we've got here is a nice combination. The artwork has been manipulated. So if you see the original poster, it's like it's two headshots. Yeah. And what they've done here is they've taken those two headshots. And they put Travolta on a man holding a gun. And I think Morgan Freeman was holding a gun or something. Anyway, so they've extended the shot and changed it. So it looks more action-y, but it's actually
It's a good sort of gumshoe style movie. Yeah. You know, so it's like a sort of detective thing where he's investigating the death of the star quarterback at a college that he used to go to, or from the town he used to go to. And Morgan Freeman's character is the Mr. Big of the town sort of thing. You know, kind of like the guy in... Roadhouse, I'm the one who runs things around here, sort of thing.
I think where Travolta gets caught out is a couple of the films that he's done lately, he's been playing real life characters.
Yeah.
And it hasn't always worked out, although one, I think the O.J. Simpson series, he was quite praised for that. But he did Gotti, which was ravaged. And Speed Kills, where apparently in some of the flashback scenes, he's supposed to be playing like a 20-year-old or 25-year-old guy.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work. So I'm curious to check out these films, but I think this one certainly has an air of quality about it.
Yeah,
he's got detective credentials. I mean, the General's Daughter is like...
That's good.
I actually really enjoyed that. I think I watched that around at yours, actually, years ago. And it's like, he plays like a military police investigator.
Did he do Basic as well?
It's the opposite, because they seem to be making the plot up as they go along in that one. You know, literally... You don't know who the bad guy is. You know, you think, they've got the bad guy. But wait, no, there's another bad guy. But wait, no, he's not the bad guy. And the person you think that they killed at the beginning of the film actually is still alive in the background. It's crazy.
Yeah, I thought The General's Daughter, that was kind of, that was around the Con Air time, and Simon West was the director of that, so I was more interested in him than that. So, but yeah, it was okay from what I remember. But yeah, I mean, Travolta, he's been around for what?
Like 70s?
50 years? Yeah. So he's been doing stuff since the mid-70s.
Yeah.
As a star, and he's, you know, he can, with the right projects, he can still shine. So this is what I'm actually quite keen to see.
Yep. And that's the DDV chart for this week. It's time for the coming soon section, and this week we've got 8 trailers to take a peek at, and we're going to start off with a little thing called Cyber Bride. In this one, we've got a guy who loses his wife and basically goes to the cyber equivalent of IKEA, by the looks of things, and gets sent a big cardboard box that he has to assemble himself. Sort of overtones of Replicas, Rich.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the first thing that came to my mind. What I was finding quite interesting about this is we've had a lot of doll movies lately.
Yep.
And in the wake of Ex Machina and stuff, you know, the Android kind of movie is quite popular as well. And this movie kind of sits between how it just makes you realise how they're all basically the same. So this is so we had Child's Play in the cinemas recently, about which in this version is a doll which has its programming switched to evil, essentially. There's no
it's the old Simpsons thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look, it's evil
switched to evil. Which was observed by Foy Wonder on Twitter. And so this is another case of a malfunctioning droid doing it's the same kind of thing. But I think it looks good. I like the ideas. Say, it is kind of well-worn stuff. I love the kitsch title.
Mm.
Kind of a throwback. And, you know, the production values are modest. Yeah. But I think, you know, they've done quite well with some of the visual stuff. Looks quite good.
It looks like they've actually gone out and bought a living dog. Those are expensive. So.
Yeah, well, it's playing on that because we looked at that Doll It Up and stuff. And Love dolls and things like that. So this all ties in with those different themes. So you've got like romantic sort of longing in there, replicas kind of sense of loss.
Yeah.
And also,
there's also that film, was it?
Eve of Destruction.
Her, kind of stuff. The one with, James Franco. Is it James Franco?
He falls in love with his operating system or something.
Yeah. Scarlett Johansson doing the voice.
Oh, her.
It's quite Siri, isn't it?
Yeah. But there's another one coming out called Ami, A-M-I. Similar sort of thing, where, you know, it's like a Siri thing, but it's basically telling people to kill people. Which looks quite good as well.
I was just going to say, this is what I was thinking was, if Amazon delivered your Stepford wife.
Mm. Yeah, Stepford wife.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, they're all touching on those same kind of themes. So as like a new version of one of those kind of stories, which is in this case scripted by our friend Tom Jolliffe.
Yeah,
we're looking forward to checking it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it must be pretty damn good to actually see something you've written come into fruition, actually see onto a screen. So well done, Tom. Okay,
but he hasn't just got that one.
No, he hasn't, because the next one we're going to talk about is Scarecrow's Revenge. This is set in Viking times. I didn't realise that Scarecrow's back in Viking times, but there you go. And indeed you do. Yeah. It's like a history lesson coming to life. So this is set on a small island, a small Viking community. And for some reason, their scarecrows are coming to life and killing people. What I do like about this is the seemingly very high kill count. Because the trailer, you know, gets through quite a decent sort of size cast of victims. So, yeah, I'll be quite interested to see this.
Again, this is a case where a couple of weeks ago we were talking about a film and I said, you know what, the film I think of is a short film called Predator Dark Ages. And that was what I thought of when I saw some of this, and I actually thought there does seem to be a Predator influence in there slightly. And I asked Tom about it, and he said subconsciously, possibly there is. I mean, he's a guy from grew up with all those kind of films, as most of the filmmakers are these days. But I think considering it's a bunch of people running around in a forest kind of movie with modest production values and that, again, I think it looks really good.
Didn't we cover a short film which was about two Vikings fighting on a beach over Jumanji. Was it Jumanji? Or
that was
like
The Mask.
Oh, The Mask one.
Yeah,
that
so that was
it,
the prelude to The Revenge of the Mask. That's short film. Yeah. Which, as a segue, but as a side note, did you know Nathan Jones is in the new episode?
We're finally getting around to the next one.
Revenge of the Mask 2 is going to have Nathan Jones and Dean Cain in it.
Awesome.
So, yeah, so we're looking forward to that. But yes, you're absolutely right. They were, I don't know if they were Vikings or whatever, but around that sort of time. So, yeah, this is another one. I think it's Proportion Productions or Champ Dog Films, one of the two. We've talked about some of their films recently, not always in favourable terms, but although we're a great supporter of what they're doing and we enjoy, everything that comes along. So, I'm curious about this. There's also two other Scarecrow movies from, I believe, the same makers. So I don't know if this is actually a continuation in any set or a prequel or in any way related, or they've just kept the theme up and maybe they're recycling some costumes or something. But we had Scarecrow Rising and Curse of the Scarecrow, I think. And I think this is from the same makers of at least one of those.
Yeah, basically, there's a market out there for Scarecrow movies.
Yeah, Scarecrow movies, they're big at the moment. I don't know why. Is there a big Hollywood Scarecrow movie? Like, I can't think of that.
I don't think so.
It's not like a whole Annabelle doll kind of Chucky thing going on. But weird. Yeah. What have we got next?
Next, we've got Mayday. This is one of these films set entirely on the inside of an airplane, by the looks of it. Very much like Final Flight that we covered a while back really liked.
Great way to keep the cost down.
Yes, well, it is. And the thing is, they managed to really make it work, didn't they? They didn't have any external shots at all. No. Everything was inside the plane.
Very good film.
Really worth seeing. This one has more of a sort of supernatural / extraterrestrial thing going on.
Yeah, I think it's definitely something happening on the plane.
Yeah. And we've got Michael Paré on there as the Sky Marshal trying to figure out what's going on. Looks like people are sort of disappearing. The trailer's not brilliant in sort of trying to portray what the film's about exactly, but it shows enough to make me think, yeah, we'll probably cover this at some point.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I was looking forward to it.
Hmm. The thing was, when I first saw it, I was just laughing, essentially, because I was just thinking, how many more films can we see about a bunch of people on an aeroplane that we're making since the airport movies? Even before that. But that was the one that popularised it. And we've had so many Rutger Hauer and the Killer Bees on the plane. We've had giant scorpions on planes. We've had snakes on a plane, obviously.
What was that Liam Neeson one where he used to kind of, like, drunk-ass sky
motion? Non-stop.
That was good.
I think that's what's kind of facilitated this upsurge with, films like this. Because this is a film that feels like it's come from the 90s. At least the early 2000s.
Like Turbulence films.
Exactly. Turbulence 4 or whatever. They were all coming around.
Terror at 50,000 feet. Was that the Hammer film or something?
That was the one with William Shatner.
Yeah.
Terror 40,000. That was Twilight Zone.
This looks all right.
I think the modest production values, they've got the set, it's closed, they can just sort of move around in it. You can control the lighting and everything. There's probably going to be a few external visual effects shots and everything, and done and dusted. And Michael Paré, could see him in a leading role. They don't come along that often, so.
I'm sort of jumping around a bit, because we should have mentioned another film first. The thing about this Mayday one, it makes a point that one of the characters, the first character who disappears is a pastor, who was making out in the corner with a woman, and then he disappeared. Our next film that we're going to mention is called Velocipasta, and it's about a priest who transmorphs into a velociraptor when he's angry.
Yes, you heard that right.
You heard that right, indeed. This looks as cheap as chips, but having said that, I like the style of the trailer, which is a real throwback to, 70s Grindhouse kind of style.
Where they have to say the title
The Velociraptor.
The punctuation, it's like an exclamation mark after
exactly.
It.
Yeah. It's coming soon to this theatre.
Even the way it was shot, the way it was shot looked like you were watching a 70s movie.
It's just weird shit, like at the beginning, the guy sort of is about to have sex with this girl, and suddenly ninjas burst in, and he sort of goes, "Damn, they must have followed me home." It happens all the time.
Just like jump into bed with someone, you'd probably want to call police or something and say, "I've been followed by ninjas."
Exactly. just double check every time. Yeah.
So how do you feel in general about these sort of compound word led
I don't mind
film
them.
Concepts?
Yeah.
We blame Sharknado, obviously, for the upsurge and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, this all ties back into Grindhouse and Planet Terror and all those kind of things that Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino were doing.
Yeah.
Hobo with a Shotgun and Machete all coming out of that as well.
Mm. But making one word, making a new word, I mean, that's just a great thing, you know. It's seeing if you can get it into a dictionary or something.
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably sat around there thinking, I mean, what was it? Was it Sharkvalanche? Did they actually make that? Because after Sharknado?
Tarantula or something?
Was it? There was Lavalanchula.
Lavalanchula. Yeah.
I'm sure that there was
Two Lava, Two Lanchula, the sequel.
Oh my, seriously. Yeah. But I'm sure that there was Sharkvalanche, and it was like, what was it? Snow is frozen water, the size of sound or something like that. And it was, honestly, and I thought, is this a real thing, or is it just something I saw on Facebook that like a cut and paste?
Wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall in those pitch meetings, basically?
I would love it.
The thing is, at its heart, this Velocipasta film is the Wolfman.
Yeah, it is.
It's just a variation. They've said, okay, so instead of turning into a wolf,
he's a dinosaur. It's like someone went, we've got this Velociraptor suit left over from a party. Can we use it?
You do see a little bit of Velociraptor actual action in the trailer, not a huge amount, so it's kind of the rubberhead variety. But hey, I don't mind that.
I'm a big fan of The Land That Time Forgot. So, yeah. Okay, we're moving into sort of slightly bigger budget now. The next one is called Dead Water. This stars Casper Van Dien. And where the hell has he been? Judd Nelson. The bad boy from The Breakfast Club and New Jack City. And that's almost all I remember him from, apart from, what was it called, From the Hip? Do you remember? You ever see that one? It was a courtroom drama, and he's a hotshot lawyer. Yeah. And he has to defend John Hurt, who's up for murder. And it was really good, because he realises that this guy really did actually murder somebody. But I can't do anything, you know, I can't actually say that he murdered somebody.
What was this one called again?
From the Hip. It's really good, from the 80s. Yeah,
I think I might have seen that.
Yeah, I saw that on Sky once, but yeah, that was a really good one.
Yeah, he's been around doing all sorts. I think he's done some Asylum Christian movies and stuff, I think. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so this time he's back with a beard.
With a beard, yeah.
He looks pretty rough and tough, actually.
Mm.
I wouldn't mess with him.
I think this is like probably the most high-profile thing we've seen him do for quite a while. I might be wrong on that.
Mm.
But it's nice to see a film coming out with his name sort of
plastered
above the title. And as far as Dead Calm knockoffs go, it looks all right.
Yeah, I think so. So in this one, a guy goes on a sort of fishing trip with his girlfriend and his best mate. And it turns out his best mate, played by Casper Van Dien, might have some nefarious reasons for taking them into the middle of nowhere, picturesque though it may be.
And Judd Nelson gets the little line. They say you're a pirate.
Yeah,
and goes, well,
I've got a parrot.
I've got a parrot. I don't think he does have a parrot, but he kind of pulls out a gun at the same time. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool little moment. Okay, next one. It's Dolph Lundgren in The Tracker. In this one, his wife and daughter get kidnapped, held for ransom, and the ransom drop goes horrifically wrong, leading Dolph to go on a rampage, tracking down the people responsible. The trailer's pretty rough for this one, I thought. And it doesn't sort of do Dolph justice. He looks quite lumbering in it.
Did you find that some of the fight choreography just looked just a bit
rock
false?
And sock and robot kind of stuff,
Didn't look like they were connecting.
I don't know if they just. I think they might have just filmed that for the trailer, almost. You know, hopefully. Anyway.
But I thought, in general, I mean, I've seen the trailer twice now.
Mm.
I get a good vibe from it. I'm actually looking on the second view. I'm actually keener to see it.
Who's the director of this one? Do you know?
Italian guy Gianno Serafini, I think. Who I think was the one who did Game of Death with Wesley Snipes. But I might be completely wrong.
Yeah.
I think that's who it is.
Right.
But the
citation needed.
Was that the first Wesley Snipes' like comeback movie?
No, it was one of his DTV periods, sort of at the tail end. But Dolph's in this. He's running around Eastern Europe, kind of thing. He's done that You know, he's been in this kind of situation since the 90s, really, running around in modestly budgeted action pictures. And I think this looks okay. It reminds me a lot of Icarus in the
Star Trek. I liked Icarus. So.
And, yeah, I mean, it's Taken, isn't it, essentially?
Yeah. Yeah, it's that sort of thing.
Although I think his family actually does get killed, so it turns into a revenge movie after that. But the original setup seems very Taken.
Indeed. Right, the last one I'm going to look at is
called... Not the last one. We got two. We got a couple more left.
What's the other one?
So we're going to go.
Oh yeah, yeah.
To...
Sorry, there we go. So the next one is Necrotronic.
Necrotronic.
So I'll do that again in five. So the next one we're going to look at is Necrotronic. This is from the guys who did the Wormwood film, which is a great zombie movie where. All sort of power, all electricity's been knocked out, and all traditional fuels doesn't work for some reason. And the way they power their cars and vehicles is by using the gas being bloated out by zombies. So they're driving around with these zombies sort of strapped to their cars with, like, you know, sort of exhaust pipes stuffed down their throat. It is really good. And it took them literally a year to make, you know, because they're filming at the weekends while they're doing a proper job. And to actually get something coherent out at the end of it, I thought was quite admirable. But now they've got a bigger budget by the looks of it. They've retained their sort of sense of humour, and their sort of action beats look pretty decent. The trailer, you know, is very well cut.
Yeah, excellent.
You know, especially the bit with all the sound effects, you know, sort of cocking the guns and everything, sort of making it
some really nice cool visual effects, yeah, and everything.
So, exactly. So the, you know, it looks like hopefully it took less than a year for them to make this one. But yeah, it's a very, very solid looking film. I'm really excited to see that.
It's the old Men in Black-ish kind of setup of an ordinary guy thrust into extraordinary circumstances and his eyes being open to, thanks to an app of all things, being open to the underworld and the world of necromancers. And they have to take on the evil Monica Bellucci, which is pretty awesome.
So, yeah, the world you thought you knew is just a sugar-coated topping. Or something.
That's an app, seriously.
Yeah, what is it? That's what it is, yeah. It's an app.
What's it called? Necronomicon.
I can't remember exactly, but it was like tap, he taps the app, and it's like, it goes into his friend. What have you done to me? And, so Monica Bellucci looks great as the villain of the piece, the same concept. You saw the Russian Guardians of the Night, that's another film that I was thinking of when I was watching it.
Yeah. Night's Watch?
No, it's called Guardians of the Night. It's a Russian movie.
Not like Night Watch, which was also a Russian movie.
Yeah. This is sort of slightly more kids friendly, I think.
Yeah, so the that looks really good. So look big, but I mean, you don't see films like this coming out of Australia. So
no,
when it starts, you expect it to be like an American movie. And then with Monica Bellucci as well. It's just like, no, it's proper Australia.
Yeah, it's good, and therefore going to be hilariously funny. It's just funniest films. They're so cool.
Okay, our last film is called Stairs. Now, this is written and directed by Tom Payton, friend of the show. I've just heard as well, Black Sight, his previous film, is now on Amazon.
Really?
Yeah.
I will have to explore that possibility.
Indeed.
Because, we've been to one of the things I was watching when the trailer came out. It's like, another one? We haven't even seen Black Sight yet. And this does seem to follow a similar trend.
I don't
think it looks as interesting as Black Sight.
It's a bit different because this is all set in one location, more or less.
And but I remember Black Sight as well. Black Sight was set in,
kind of,
in the room.
But I remember him, Tom, being on Facebook and saying, I need help looking for this location, you know. I need something with like lots and lots of stairs going down, basically. I remember them sort of talking about it. It's quite a dark, sort of cynical looking film. Some soldiers have been pushed into doing some rather nefarious deeds and sort of unleashing hell, basically.
Yeah, I didn't really get a full sense of what the situation was, but from the top, because when the title came up, I was like, so what's stairs then? And then you see in the trailer, they are stuck on a staircase.
I'm
guessing that's where the heart of the film is.
Yeah, it looks like some sort of portal. So yes, that is the coming soon section for this week. Our main review this week is Solace. In this one, a space mining mission goes horribly wrong, leading to one pilot left on an escape pod, drifting towards the sun. Will he be able to fix his craft in time in order to save himself, and will anyone actually be able to get to rescue him? This is available on Netflix. Rich, what did you think?
Yeah, it's also just out on DVD as well. What did I think? Well, yes, I liked it. I went in quite low expectations, to be honest. The film poster promotes the actor Stephen Ogg in the lead, who I'm not familiar with, so I wasn't sure what to get from it. The cover's quite nice, but you know, it's your typical astronaut's head kind of shot that we've seen quite a lot, you know, like First Man and different things. And also another film that we're going to talk about later takes the same approach with the poster. But I thought it was very, very stylish, very 2001 influenced, as most of these films are in one way or another. So the aesthetics are very good. The score is excellent for me, really elevates it. I was in and out of it. I enjoyed it, but there were times that I was sort of drifting away. But there was plenty of action, sort of drama that was kicking in. That they punctuate enough of that and happens enough, and the music comes in as well, so it really draws you in. That I thought the overall the film worked really well.
Yeah, I wasn't as sold, I must admit. It kind of grew on me a little bit as it went on, especially when, you know, they expanded on the sets. Like, he had to go outside to try and fix bits. That was all really good. The peril side of it was just like, well, of course he's going to fix it. He's the only one on the bloody cast list. You know, he's got to at least get to the end of the film.
Except for Alice Lowe, who's on the other end.
Yeah, so he does manage to make contact with a commander of another ship who, you know, she does sort of steer her ship towards him to try and reach him in time. But I don't know, overall. I was kind of saying earlier about the whole, you know, that sort of survivalist kind of film. Films like The Shallows as well. It just doesn't really do anything to me, or for me, I should say. There's no sort of human interaction to sort of keep me really enthralled with what's happening. I thought it was okay. I thought it was too long.
Yeah,
especially at the end. I thought they really did drag out the ending, and then, you know.
Well, we did that short film FTL quite some time ago, is kind of in a similar vein of these kind of movies. But that was short and succinct. It was like 15 minutes long. So yeah, this, you know, they kept having to be another drama to overcome.
It reminded me of there's a scene in Star Trek Generations where Geordi LaForge turns around to Captain Picard and he says, "Captain, we've got another problem. We've got a new problem." You know, and that's kind of what this is like. It's like, right, I'll fix that bit, but I can't get a breath because there's another problem now. It's like, you know, it's almost as if he's like, you know, tugging at a thread on a tapestry, and, you know, you pull one thread and it unravels something else somewhere else. And it was just kind of relentlessly bleak in that way. I mean, it looked, you know, as you said, it looks great, sounds great. But I just found it a bit, ugh.
I like the tension of the splintering glass on the porthole, or whatever it's called, especially.
I suppose the successful version of this is The Martian, isn't it? You know, I suppose that's why films like this do exist.
Yeah.
But at least that had an expansive cast. You know, you could see both sides of what was actually going on. This is all, you know, it's a one man show with one other person at the other end of the sort of walkie-talkie / telephone or whatever you want to call the communications. But, I don't know. The casual viewer, I don't know what they're going to really get out of it.
But yeah, I did. There were a couple of bits that I really liked. Near the start of the film, he has to go through to, like, the back of the ship, which is freezing cold.
Yeah.
And I liked the fact that when he went to back, he had to turn the handle, and I liked the fact that his hand got stuck, because I thought that was a really realistic thing, and he had to basically pull his hand away and leave the flesh, which was good. But then, so I thought, well, that's sort of scientifically, you know, good stuff. But then they went on the outside of the ship later, and the bits of debris from whatever it was, because I got a bit confused in the film with what all the stuff was that was coming at them. There was like an explosion, and it was flying through space, and it starts hitting the ship, and he's got to narrowly avoid, you know, getting hit. But it all starts going dunk, 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 and I was like, hang on a minute, shouldn't that be no sound whatsoever?
Another good version of this is, what's it called, Europa Reports,
that's what it was called. Because that's where he's, in a different, sorry, there was another film called Astronaut The Last Push, and in that, which is a similar kind of film to, actually very similar film to this, which is on Amazon Prime, featuring Lance Henriksen, much lower budget, and that is about astronauts going to Europa.
All right. Yes, yeah, so...
Europa Report.
Yeah. No, I was just going back to this one.
Oh.
So, yeah, so Solace, you know, as the title kind of suggests, I suppose it works in two ways. You've got Sol, which is obviously the sun, and then Solace, which could sort of mean sort of solitary sort of situation. But, yeah, it is an interesting film up to a point, but I think it's a bit too long for what it is.
It is only an hour and a half. They could probably have shaved it down to an hour and 15.
Yeah.
Alice Lowe is on the other end of the phone, so it's quite nice to hear her voice.
Mm-hmm.
She was the one who did Prevenge and stuff like that.
All right, yeah.
Apart from it's literally just a two people show. Really.
Yes.
I mean, although there are other people on the cast list, but I think that's probably like the corpse.
The corpse sitting next to him. Yeah.
But like they try to unfold the story. Like he's disorientated. He doesn't really know. He doesn't really want to face what's happened. He's got traumatic stress and stuff like that. And then they explore the past, and there's his past, and he's talking to her on the phone. Sometimes it seems they open up a bit too much, but they do develop some kind of a bond. And I would say, although I got confused at times, I thought, really it's the aesthetics for me that really sold the film.
Yeah, the production values are very good for it. How are you going to score it?
I am going to score it a 7 out of 10.
Well, I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10, so... Mileage will vary on this one, guys. So at least it's on Netflix, so you know you're not paying anything extra for it, unless you want to buy it, of course. Our DTV throwback this week is Approaching the Unknown. Following the theme of Solace, this is about a lone astronaut on his way to Mars, the first manned mission. Mark Strong. Mark Strong stars as...
It'd be great if it was Mark Strange.
That would be pretty cool. Stars as William Staniforth, the first man who's going to land on the moon. The Mars. And a few weeks after he's launched, another astronaut is supposed to follow him. And together they're going to sort of start building a colony on Mars. So a lot of the film is basically Mark Strong in his spaceship on his way to Mars. The reason he seems to be chosen was because he came up with this water filtering system.
He's like an engineer. Yeah. So his passion is to solve the problem of Mars, essentially.
Absolutely.
And that he's found the solution, then he's got backing, and so now they're banking on him, basically.
Mm. Back in Mission Control, he's ably supported by Luke Wilson, who's sort of the voice of reason. Because I think what's interesting about Mark Strong's character is that he's a bit of an egotist.
Very much so.
You know, he's one of these sort of hands-on guys who can, I know this ship from top to bottom. I know every system. I don't need to rely on tech support for this. You know, and I can fix just anything I want. When really he should be listening to ground control. But so at least we're getting both sides of the equation this time. We're getting a bit more information. There's more sets going on because we're getting that sort of flashback to when he's testing his system out in the desert.
It's a broader canvas.
A broader canvas, and you know, it is interesting to sort of see him cope with his mission, which is like 270 days in space. You know, and how he sort of copes with that,
and he meets up with some other people on the way.
Oh god, that's freaky. Yeah. So at one point he has to sort of take on supplies from another ship which has been doing experiments in space. And these two guys are just like so despairing, aren't they? They're just like, they've lost. It's really weird because their sort of experiments they were doing just failed. It's just like they've just lost all hope, basically. Even though they can go back home. Yeah, they're stuck there and it's like, oh God, man, it's really bad. And it's really eerie because, you know, they're sort of saying things like, like, just, okay, just pack up your shit and go home. Don't go any further than this. You know, and you're thinking, is there something else going on? You know, is it a case of like 2010? You know, where the sort of aliens are sort of talking through people, maybe, and sort of trying to dissuade him from continuing. And you don't know until later on whether or not there's anything sort of extraterrestrial going on at all. But no, it's very interesting to see.
And then, he's got that mindset, hasn't he? He's like, yeah. This is what I'm doing. This is what I want to do. I'm going to sort this out.
Yeah,
I'm going to make a difference.
He's a bloody-minded kind of individual, yeah. Basically. But in the end, you're not even sure whether or not his mission has actually been successful in one way.
There is ambiguity.
There's ambiguity as to whether or not he's still got contact with Earth. You know, so yeah.
His mental state does come, does begin to suffer as the film's going on. He narrates provides a voiceover through the whole story that he's essentially recording his space log.
Yeah.
And so
his last will and testament, basically. Yeah.
So it's not like there's long periods of no dialogue or anything, even when he's not talking to Luke Wilson. If he's not talking to Luke Wilson, he's talking to himself.
Yeah.
So there's a consistent stream of dialogue.
And luckily he has got one of those voices which carries the film. You know, he's very good at narrating stuff. So.
Although I would have preferred him playing in English, to be honest.
Yeah, there is that. But he has got that sort of Morgan Freeman quality where you could just listen to him reading the phone book, and just continue. But I much preferred this over Solace. I thought it was a better film. Production values are higher. I think the science behind what they're doing is pretty sound. Mm. And just really works, basically, for me.
And I'm the opposite.
Really?
Because I much preferred Solace. Fair enough. I didn't engage with this particularly well, to be honest. No, I'm not. So it was... I thought it was okay, but I was only sort of passively engaged. Mm. Whereas with Solace, because of that visual dimension to it and the music, I was a lot more involved. So although this it has the better lead actor, it's arguably a more high profile film because of that, and also having like Luke Wilson and stuff involved. I thought it was okay. But I couldn't say I would think of it more than that. If I can score it now, I'm gonna say it's a 5 for me.
Well, I'm the opposite. I'm going to give this a 7. So there you go.
That's brilliant. That's why it works so well.
The tables have turned with Approaching the Unknown. It's time for the last part of the show, so it's over to Rich with the washing up.
Right, a typically diverse selection over here. These are films that are released on DVD around sort of the mid to late July period. So let's kick it off right now with a film I know you're excited about, Mike. Mm-hmm. It's an action film called Master Z, Ip Man Legacy.
Yeah, so this is a spin-off from the last Ip Man film. The guy that Ip Man fights at the end of that particular one, now turned good guy, getting involved with Dave Bautista and Michelle Yeoh. Really looking forward to getting hold of this.
So this is Max Zhang as well. So him and... Bautista are in Escape Plan 3 as well, which was out on cinema and VOD recently, but we'll be looking forward to on DVD in a few weeks' time. I don't know much about these films in particular.
Mm.
Do you think I'm going to need to see the others, or do you think you can just walk
into
this?
No, this is a completely sort of standalone film.
Yeah.
You don't need to sort of know his background, other than the fact that he's very good at Wing Chun.
Mm-hmm. And which series of Ip Man films was it?
This is the Donnie Yen one.
This is the Donnie Yen. So I've seen the official first ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, we're waiting for Ip Man 4 because Scott Atkins is one of the baddies. So,
So moving on now, sticking with sort of a similar sort of action-y sort of thing, that we're going to a Western now. It's called The Last Days of Billy the Kid.
Hmm. Now, considering we've got the film The Kid recently with Ethan Hawke and Chris Pratt. Quite interesting that there's a second film about Billy the Kid coming out.
Looks a lot lower budget from the cover.
Yeah.
Which is usual.
We did a thing a while ago, didn't we, about the video covers with a guy standing with his back to the audience, as it were. And here we go again,
He's looking towards us.
He's three-quarter onto us. He's facing us.
From where I was sitting, I looked the other way around.
But I know the ones you mean, though. There's an awful lot of that.
But whether that's his actual face in the movie,
whether or not he,
it could just be
anything looks like that, or you know, I want to see that eagle. I want to make sure that eagle is in the film. It's floating there. It's like when you get war films, and they always put a helicopter. Zombie movies. They always put helicopters on the cover because it makes it look more expensive.
Yeah. But they never feature in the film.
No. Anyway, what's next
one? The next one is a wartime film called Ashes and Ashes in the Snow.
Don't know much about this one, mate.
No, I think it's from
Siberia, 1941, a harrowing true story.
Yeah, I think it's based on a book.
Siberia at any time would be pretty rough, but in 1941, I would imagine.
So Stalin, Lenin, Stalin.
1941, it would have been under Stalin.
Yeah.
So, I believe it's Lithuanian. I think 16-year-old artist and her family get deported to Siberia.
Yes. Oh, God, we saw the trailer for this.
Did we?
Yes, this is grim.
The gulags.
Yeah.
Where they put all the dissidents. And it's like, it took months to get there. So, it's like, there's no point running away. Because there's no way you can go. And it's just frozen. Just tundra, isn't it? It's just.
This is grim because it has connotations of things like, you know, sort of the sort of Bosnian conflict and things like that. And how all that sort of came about. It's, it's not brutal. Not good.
Well, there's romance in there, apparently, as well. It says genres on IMDb: drama, history, romance, and war. It's a Lithuanian-American co-production.
She was a college lecturer or something, and then, ousted as a dissident. And,
They just sent anyone he didn't like off to the gulags.
So the next one, which I think is brilliant, being released the same week as Dumbo, is Jumbo.
I see what they did there.
It's very clever. Isn't it? Can you imagine being a harassed mum, sort of running around Asda, and it's like, Mum, get me the Dumbo film, get me the Dumbo film. And picking, you're looking at two films, one's 12 quid and one's 5 quid.
Yeah.
You know, which one are you going to pick up?
I think there'd be regrets if you pick up the wrong one, but it's going to be the 5 quid one.
It's going to be the 5 quid.
And then you'll pay the extra.
Then you'll end up buying the other one anyway.
Yeah.
So the description is, Mr. Hollis is Bert's uncle and businessman. Mr. Hollis is unhappy with the fact that an elephant rivals his nephew, but he asks the jungle doctor for help. For Dr. Jumbo, he writes a cursed prescription and Jumbo begins to lose his memory. Unable to remember even the simplest things, Jumbo wants to withdraw from the competition, but his friends prevent him and go seek help from a dinosaur.
Where are you reading this from? A dinosaur?
From a dinosaur. Yeah, so this is IMDb's...
Has this been Google translated from some weird language?
No, exactly, I don't know. But it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Mr. Hollis, I like that. Mr. Hollis is Bert's uncle and businessman.
So? Who's Bert?
Somebody's got a good grasp of English there.
There is an elephant on the cover. And none of that says Bert to me. None of that picture. He helps Bert.
Can you imagine sitting down to watch this thinking it's a Dumbo knockoff? And what you end up getting is some sort of like corporate takeover sort of thing going on. And you sit there watching going, where's the elephant?
It's Wall Street. It's disguised as a children's movie.
It's from the director of many, many, many animated low-budget films, including Zoo Wars 2. Feathered Friends, Oh Dear, It's Christmas,
as in
The Lion Kid, tying Billy the Kid there, Dogtown. Funnily enough, these are all scheduled for 2019, which is interesting. B-Team 2.
B-Team?
B-Team, yeah. That's Zoo Wars, I think that turned up on Amazon Prime or something, but yeah. Low quality animation is the order of the day, I think we'll find with that one.
And bizarre storylines that make...
Yeah, if that is an accurate IMDb page, because that just sounds nonsense to me. I can't see any hint of a dinosaur in there, but you never know, do you?
It's sort of thing people put on Wikipedia for a joke. Should have like citation needed, sort of like in the corner, to the bottom of it.
So, moving on to science fiction this week, we have Defective, which is from Canada, I believe, and Mutants, which for my money has the best cover of the week, and is also known as Allegiance of Power originally.
Okay.
That's from the United States. Kind of a superheroish kind of thing. Very much going for an X-Men vibe.
It does look a little bit.
I don't know if the movie will live up to the cover, but I'm certainly sold on that cover. What about you?
I must admit, I haven't sort of checked these ones out. So I'm in the dark on these ones.
But basically, I know you've got not great
great view on that cover, but the if you were to...
If I was to... Listen, you're right, that is a good cover for the Mutants one. The other one, I think they're ripping off the spaceship from...
District 9?
District 9.
Yeah. So many DTV releases do that, don't they?
Well, and also it looks a little bit like a Terminator... killer as well, you know what I mean?
That's the Mutants one. As well. Right. Allegiance of Powers.
See, helicopters, top down.
There won't be one in the movie.
No. I'll give it a look.
So the UK cover for Allegiance of Powers, or Mutants as it's going, they've got the same image as in the American poster, but they've put a giant, big monster in the background and like a montage of other characters.
Is he supposed to be a mixture of Cyclops, Iceman,
probably.
And... flame guy.
Yeah. You notice as well the colour scheme. There's loads and loads of films use that sort of ice blue and
flashy yellow
for the things. Not always to good effect either. Usually a sign of a bad film. things like The Last Airbender and the first G.I. Joe movie and things like this. Yeah.
So I'm just going to read the plot description again from IMDb. Hopefully this one is true. Groups of superpowered people begin a war that will bring the city they live in crumbling down. Allegiances of superpowered people fight for control of a young girl who holds the ultimate power to control anything and everyone in the city.
Convenient.
Yeah. They will begin a war that in the end could bring the entire city crumbling down. Fairly standard kind of... scenario there. Defective, I think, is a different kettle of fish. I think we're more of a subtle kind of...
I don't think even Robocop.
I think I'm not sure. I seem to recall we looked at the trailer for Defective in the coming soon. A while back, the original poster is quite different. The description, which I will read in just a second. So the tagline on the original poster was, "In a perfect society, there's no room for imperfection." So, set in the near future, where Rhett Murphy and his estranged sister Jean are forced to flee from a militant police state after witnessing the dark secrets of a nefarious corporation.
There's a lot going on in that movie.
Mm. Yeah. I like the sound of both of them, to be honest. I'm quite intrigued.
What a side note. Do you remember we covered a short with Robbie Amell, where he had superpowers? There's all these mutants with powers. Stephen Amell's brother.
I don't know who those people are. I can't think of who they are.
Steve Amell's the guy who plays Arrow. Yeah. Anyway, we covered a short. It was a really good one with some really good special effects and things. And they've actually made it into a full feature now.
Is that Code 9?
Code 9, yeah.
Right, yes. Yeah, we love Code 9.
Yeah, that was really good. And so they've managed to actually flesh that out into a full feature.
Well, that's what... when the Defective... the droid in that reminds me of some other stuff.
Is that a droid?
I thought it was just a chap in a suit.
Robots.
Well, half and half, probably. I don't know exactly. You never know.
They do look fairly intriguing. It's just that one does look like a kind of... I mean, it really does look like it's a bit of a clone of X-Men. But, I mean, this one looks like...
Considering the state of the X-Men, that's probably not a bad thing, actually.
It has lost its way somewhat.
Yes. Mm. I mean, I haven't seen Dark Phoenix yet, but I've heard bad things. I actually like the trailer.
Somebody who saw it and loved it.
So yeah, come on.
Horses for Courses.
First few films are good.
So, horror is a big hit. Mm-hmm. And so we've got five to mention here.
Okay.
The first one, so I've categorised it as horror. I haven't seen it or the trailer or anything, but I'm guessing it is. It's all about Charles Manson, and it's got Matt Smith as Mr. Manson himself.
Really?
Matt Smith.
From playing, Doctor Who?
Yes, exactly. From the director, Mary Hannon, who did American Psycho.
What's the title of the film?
Charlie Says.
Okay.
So I don't really know anything about it more than that, apart from the fact that I would have I thought it must be one that's getting at least a limited cinema release, but it's not.
There are so many Manson films out
there. Well, exactly. So I'm not sure how...
And I'm wondering...
I think it's probably been tucked away because of the Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, movie. I think that's what's kicked it off. I think the fact that everyone heard that Tarantino was doing a film which involved the Mansons sort of put a lot of things, especially sort of low budget stuff, into production.
I'm guessing this one is much more of a reasonable pedigree because based on the director at the start, I think if anything, the fact that Once Upon a Time is coming out, they've kind of gone, actually, we don't think there's room for this and that in the cinema, but we think we might do all right with it on DTV, DVD. The next one is The Witch in the Window, which we reviewed a while back when it was on premiered on Shudder. Which we really enjoyed it. Very low, understated.
It was a very understated film. Very small cast. It was creepy, that one. It was very good. Definitely worth seeing.
Yeah. Next one is... Now, we would be talking about this on the show had we not just done a Dolls-themed episode, but we will look at it at some point. It's Puppet Master, The Littlest Reich.
Oh, my God. I've seen this. I have seen this, and it's great.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's quite a lot of reasons why it wouldn't be.
But do you know what the deal is with this one?
Go on.
So this is not a continuation of the original series. This is a reboot from the... writer or co-writer of Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah, that's right.
And Brawl in Sublock 99, I think, as well. Okay. So, quite a decent pedigree for it. And they've kind of gone a different way.
So, basically, you got the ones that were set in the Second World War are taken as gospel. And this is sort of... Yeah, canon even. That's the one I'm looking for.
Oh, really? So they reference Puppet Master 3 and stuff?
Yeah, so this one is about an actual exhibition or an auction of the actual dolls that were created by...
Andre Toulon.
Yeah. So all these people who've got sort of these dolls, have collected them over the years, sort of bring them all to this hotel for this auction going on. It's really interesting, really good. It's got Barbara Campton in it as well.
Does it work as a horror movie?
Yeah. I mean, it gets a bit cynical. Some of the kills are very good.
It's supposed to be quite nasty and offensive, intentionally, so. Like racist kills and stuff.
Yeah, there is that sort of intention. Because, you know, these dolls are Nazis, basically. You know, that's what they're designed for. So, yeah, they're going for the gays, the blacks, you know, that sort of thing. They're their main sort of targets. Because they actually do bring it up in the film as well. You know, they do recognise that sort of going... Why didn't they kill you? He's going, oh, yeah, because I'm white. You know, it's that sort of thing.
So it's like black comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andre Toulon, in the original, in even Puppet Master 3, he wasn't a Nazi, though, was he? Or was it?
How did the dolls end up? Radicalised.
Yeah. In the credits at the beginning,
you
get sort of like drawings and cartoons and things sort of showing how he was used by the Nazis. But he was sort of a very willing participant in this particular version.
I mean, the Puppet Master films don't really have much of a continuity anyway. No. I mean, if you look at I watched some videos and reviewing them and analysing them, and they were saying, Puppet Master 3 or whatever makes no sense compared to Puppet Master 1 because what they say in Puppet Master 1 is completely contradicted. It's like the character comes from a different time period and all the things like that. So, you can take that with a grain of salt anyway. But yeah, I'm interested to see this fresh new approach.
Yeah.
And the other Puppet Master, the original series, a bit like what's happening with Child's Play, the original stuff is still happening, is still being developed, still being followed, and this is kind of just a different reboot. Project that's happening separately.
Is it a total reboot? Like, completely ignore all of the previous stuff?
Well, as Mike was saying, it does reference
some of them.
But it's a standalone, it's not connected to any of those other series of films.
And there's a particular character in it, now that I'm remembering, who's like the main character's best friend. They both go to this thing with his girlfriend. And it is really fun. You know, the two of them, really, really funny. It actually works really well. So, yeah, I think it's really good.
Excellent. Next up, there's two other films to mention. Clown Motel, the latest clown-based horror
tale. Spare me.
And Mermaid, Lake of the Dead.
So this Mermaid one, that's been delayed before, isn't it, I think?
I think...
Is this the one where they're actually posing on the cover to make it look like Ariel from the Disney movie?
No, she doesn't look like Ariel. I can't really work it
out. Yeah, you get the... There's a little bit of
that. Yeah, her body shape, you know, the way she's marching on back and things.
Well, at time of recording, this is due out. So if it hasn't turned up... this does happen sometimes, that the films get pushed away and pushed around. There was a couple actually I was looking, or else that was coming out, and they were on the British Association of Screen Entertainment's release list.
Yeah.
There was one called The Bare Knuckle Brawler with Danny Trejo. I went on to Amazon, and Amazon says it's not out until September. So they change these things around sometimes.
Indeed.
But, yeah, so
I'm not interested. I mean, Mermaid of the Lake of the Dead, I think, has got a really nice cover art.
Yeah.
I'm quite interested. But I think, I'm pretty sure there's another mermaid based on
the movie. Yeah, I've seen one. Yeah.
They're on like a ship or something. There's like a bunch of people on the ship, and they catch one and they put it in the tank, and it's like it's got hypnotic powers and stuff. What was that?
Sounds interesting, but
no, it's like getting into their heads. And then the males, like, she looks really beautiful and stuff in this tank, and she can, if you go too close, she like uses mind control and stuff on you. The siren's voice on there. And the males are outside and they're like messed up, they're like really dangerous. Like, you don't already see them towards the end, and then they sort of come in when there's hero chomping to be done and stuff. But have you not seen it?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Oh, it's cool. I mean, just
a fever dream, maybe.
I do have a lot of these.
So before we wrap up the washing up, there's actually a few other releases I'm just going to give a cursory note to. Passing mentions, I'll say. So we've got some prestige dramas, so these are the ones that were VOD release. Ashes the Purest White, Birds of Passage, and Sunset.
Mm-hmm.
The usual LGBT quotient is here. We've got Always Say Yes, which the cover says contains real sex, a lot of it, and hidden kisses. And in the documentaries, there's The Edge, which is all about cricket. A cricket match or cricketer, narrated by Toby Jones. But of most interest to me is Armstrong, which features the voice of Harrison Ford narrating the words of Neil Armstrong in this documentary all about the astronauts.
I just imagine Harrison Ford just falling asleep halfway through that, isn't it? I can't imagine him
nudging him. Those were all, those documentaries, they're both very limited theatrical exposure alongside the DTV. The cricket one, particularly, that's quite unusual because cricket films don't come along very often. Oh, okay.
There's three.
We're just looking at the cover for Mermaid Song, which is the
2015
film that Will was referring to. I actually think that is another film that is due for release and has been put back. I think it's one I was researching a couple of weeks ago. I think it's been put back to like September or October now. But so Mermaids in vogue again.
Yes.
So
there's three that I want to mention, which are going on straight onto streaming. Again, I think they had a very limited simultaneous cinema release. First of which is a non-rom-com called For Love or Money. In this one, it's a guy who he's always been besotted with this girl since school, but she doesn't pay him any attention. But then she finds out that he's about to be a millionaire because he's going to sell this startup company he had. He's going to get all that 20 million. So she conspires with another old school friend to woo him and then divorce him and take half the money. Except he finds out before they get married and then starts making her life a sort of miserable hell, basically. You know, just playing all these sort of mind games on her to try and make her break up before the wedding. But they're both sort of so bloody-minded that neither of them give up, you know, because she's got her eyes set on this 20 million and he still kind of loves her in a way, you know, but he just keeps pushing her and pushing her. He does some horrible things like, you know, she's got these designer white jeans, so he goes and buys a pair which are a size smaller and swaps them out, so they're exactly the same, because now that they're no longer fit, and, you know, becomes sort of body conscious and things like this. And it's pretty good. It walks a very fine line between, you know, just being pure abuse and bullying and actually sort of being funny. And you end up sort of sympathising with both characters over the course of the film.
What was it called? For Love or Money?
For Love or Money, yeah.
Yeah, that's you told me about that. That did sound quite...
It's pretty good. I enjoyed that one. Another one is 13 Graves, which comes out from Evolutionary Films. This is a mashup of Cockney Gangster with the Supernatural. It has two hitmen who have to take a guy into the forest to off him and bury his body. And as a result of going there, they come across a kind of cult of sort of vagrants who are sort of performing pagan rituals out in the forest and come a cropper of them. It's, again, a pretty decent sort of good production values for that one. And finally is a film called Unacceptable Loss, starring Jamie Lee Curtis as a very manipulative president and vice president. who kind of coerces one of her aides into lying about a series of events so they could take an executive action and what falls out of that. It's a really good political thriller. Takes a while to get going, but once it does, it doesn't let up. It's very, very good.
Is that available yet, that one?
Yeah, that's available on Monday, on the 15th.
So 2 weeks after people are listening to this, Robin.
Yeah, so by the time I get around to editing this and publishing it, it'll definitely be available. Jamie Lee Curtis is really good in that. But I believe
from Joe Chappelle.
Yes.
Joe Chappelle, yeah, who did my favourite Halloween movie, Halloween 6.
Oh, right.
The Curse of Michael Myers.
Okay.
That's your favourite, 6?
My favourite is the remake. The recent remake.
Really?
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Not the H20.
No, the one that came out last year, with Jamie Lee Curtis in it again. Not the Rob Zombie ones, but
half a bit enough.
No, I thought it was really good.
We're going to check it out. Why do you think six really good?
No, it depends on your taste. I mean, I just really like the aesthetics of it and other aspects to the story, Donald Pleasance and everything. Yeah, it's a good package for me.
I'm going to check it out then.
Anyway, that is our show for this week. Thank you to Will and Rich for joining me in my pokey little hotel room in London to record this. There may be some sound issues on this one, but I'll try and iron out as much as I can. Unfortunately, I've brought the wrong bloody microphone, but there we go. It's a very enjoyable episode to record. Good bit of banter going on. So join us again on the next episode, and thank you for listening.
Listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.